Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Manxiety Podcast, the anxiety podcast with an M for men. And our little catchphrase is, this is the podcast you wish your man would listen to. So with me as always is Garth. Party on, Garth.
Party on, Wayne.
Woohoo! Doctor. So Nima and I are using 25-year-old references because we're getting a little older. But, you know, today we're going to talk about how our parents kind of facilitate our anxiety in a lot of ways. I think we're born with a certain level of sensitivity. That's true. But if our parents don't give us that secure attachment where we've been seen, heard, loved, and protected, it's very easy for us to slip into anxiety, isn't it, my friend Nima?
Absolutely. Thanks to you, I really became aware of this intimate relationship with parents, the way that we were parented and our sense of self-worth and the way that we actually work with our emotions. I mean, I dedicated my entire career to helping people get out of emotional pain. Unknowingly, I was trying to do it within myself because I was parented in a certain way. So today, I thought it'd be really fun if you and I could talk about, I mean, there's many ways of, you know, because you and I are both parents, there's many ways we can pass that on to kids, but there's one specific way that we wanted to talk about that really unknowingly passes it on to the next generation. And maybe anyone can relate. And that is, do you want to share it?
No, you go ahead.
It is viewing the child as an ego extension when you're parented in a way where you're kind of like an ego extension of the parent. Do you want to talk a little bit about how that contributes to anxiety and what that looks like, what it sounds like, what it looks like, and then how that
contributes? Yeah, there's a saying that the biggest burden a child can bear is the unlived life of the parent. Right.
The biggest burden a child can bear
is the unlived life of the parent.
And so, why? You know, why is that?
Stage moms. Well, because the parent creates all their needs through the child. The child loses their ability to have their own needs. And Gabor talks about that in his latest book about, you know, do you choose authenticity or do you choose connection?
Attachment.
And if a parent is loving, caring, and attached, they will make sure that you as a child get your needs met. But if the parent isn't and probably didn't get their needs met when they were a child, because we parent the way we were parented, we pass on this sort of inability to allow the child to have their own authenticity. We see them as a version or as an extension of ourselves. And that's very difficult. And Neufeld talks about that too. Like, things should slide downhill. That's the way it's supposed to go. But a lot of times in this situation, in this society that we live in, there's so much stress in the parents that the children naturally try to make the parents feel better. And this is where I think codependency starts too. And you 100%. And I both had this to some extent. And I think that's one of the reasons we both became, you know, doctors in many ways.
Yeah. Holding space, being in a position where you're having to parent the parent,
your parent,
in some way, exactly. Like whether you were like a therapist, like in my case, whether you were like sometimes like found yourself like the peacemaker trying to get them, the two warring parents to see eye to eye. And it's of no surprise that what I do for my work now, what my superpower is helping people recreate healthy, secure attachments now. But essentially the ego extension, the experience of like the child is there to serve my needs as a representative of me. You're a representative of me. I'm responsible for who you are. And so that ego extension causes the child then to be raised living for approval, living for,
and they don't know
a
who
really
they are.
Good example That's of this is Tiger Woods. Did you watch Tiger Woods's documentary with his dad?
I've seen a lot of different things on him and his dad over the years, but I mean, Tiger didn't have a lot of friends. You know, there was a lot of stuff in there. Yeah.
He was just trained to be the world's best golfer, right? And this dad who was like, I could see this, he was like, this child, actually, this is what he said. this child is going to unite humanity because he's a black kid playing golf. And he literally idealized his kid from a very young age. Like, this is going to be my child who's going to unify humanity because of the racial thing and golf thing. And imagine having all of that responsibility on as a child, eh?
Yeah. And, you know, Tiger loved his dad for sure, because his dad poured a, and that's, I think, where the seduction comes in, because when we're too young to handle these responsibilities, and yet the parent says, oh, you know, you're my best friend. You know, whenever I hear a mother say, oh, my daughter is my best friend, I just cringe. It's like, that's not the way it's supposed to go. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be your alpha and they're, you know, they're,
you're there to meet their needs. Your job is to meet their needs. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And then it gets blurred, especially in single parent families, all that kind of thing, where, you know, it's stressful raising a kid in a couple, let alone having to do it yourself. So I think in a lot of single parent households, the parent does kind of start engaging the oldest, specifically the oldest child, usually, to become kind of a confidant, to become kind of a surrogate spouse in a way. And there's that that book, Silently Seduced, which is the same kind of thing. You know, the adult needs that care. They don't have the ability to draw it from outside. Yeah. So they draw it from the child.
And enmeshment is when the child's boundaries, the boundaries between self and other, get blurred. And so when we become the ego extension of our parent, you know, like, you're there to edify the parent, this completely erodes our self-worth. And actually, this is what causes, from, you know, what my interest and background really is this is perfect, a perfect storm for a trauma bond, because you become attracted to the narcissist. This is exactly what the narcissist codependent dynamic is. You're literally reliving it with a partner.
That's the Freudian repetition compulsion. Yeah. What was familiar to you in childhood? Because people, human beings, equate familiarity with security, even if it's damaging. So when we equate familiarity with security, even if there's a damaging part of our youth, we will recreate that damaging part, searching for the security that was never really there in the first place.
Yeah.
And that's one of the frailties of being a human being. It's, I always think of Conrad Lorenz and the ducks, you know, when these ducks imprinted on him and would follow him everywhere. So we're so impressionable as children. We're such information sponges that if we get some positive attention from doing something like taking care of a parent, and we get all sorts of positive attention from that, we're much more likely to bond into that activity and keep doing it right through our whole lives. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In my case, whenever my parents' friends would come over, like my twin brother and I, we're very theatrical. So we would watch, you know, Saturday Night Live and Hanzo. Like, that's why you and I get along so well, because we do all of the same skits, but my brother and I would do them.
Yeah.
So then when my parents would have their friends come over, we would basically get on stage and my dad was like, okay, do that joke. Kind of like Joe Jackson, the Jackson 5. Yeah. It's another great example of how that creates paralyzing anxiety. Now, I'm not saying it to disparage my dad. Like, that was great. We love the attention. But what I'm saying is that it set up this framework. It sets up a framework of narcissism, doesn't it?
Yeah,
and this is anxiety in the child, because we have to abandon ourselves for validation. And that split from ourselves, which I've learned from you, is the cause of anxiety. So we are raising anxious children when we make them an extension of us. And so the main question we have to ask is, what's happening within me that I have to make my child an extension of my own identity? Because this is, now we got to turn to the solution.
Well, that's a huge question, because it's like the parents that come to me and say, you know, I'm really worried that I'm a bad mother or a bad father. And I said, well, just asking the question, just being concerned about that probably means you're not, right? Because Bad mothers and bad fathers don't ask if they're bad mothers or bad fathers.
That's right.
Act from unconscious, typically,
yeah.
You know, childhood.
They put it on the kid. Oh, my kid has this problem. My kid is neurodivergent. My kid, they enter label here to absolve them of the responsibility of it, right?
On some level too. And you know, there is that sort of Munchausen's by proxy too. So if your kid is sick and you get attention from your kid being sick and you never got attention as a child, you know, that can be a very seductive kind of thing. And there's lots of cases where parents have made their children sick in order to be able to take them in and get attention and sort of like, oh, you're such a good parent. You're looking after them so well. They have this, you know, strange disease that nobody knows what's causing. And yet you're so patient with them. And really, you know, they're causing the disease in the first place.
Talk about intergenerational trauma. Yeah. So I'm I often say the greatest gift I can give my son is a father who loves himself, because the chances of me passing that stuff down is far less. And I can take on my role, which isn't to have his approval, which isn't because I don't, if I say no Paw Patrol, we got to go to bed. He then turns and he's like, I don't love you. And if I get activated from my abandonment wound and then I react to that, I'm not, who's the one, who's the authority there?
Yeah.
Right. So my ability to be able to self-soothe and self-regulate and work through all of my insecurities that I was raised in allows me to break that cycle for Dominic, the greatest gift that we can give a child, which will prevent them from having anxiety, is if we work through our traumas. And Irene Lyon says that you got to save up because your kids are going to need therapy. Like she says, save your money because your kids, based on everything you didn't learn, are unconsciously downloading your insecurities and anxieties to them.
Yeah. So, I mean, my fundamental thing about anxiety is it's separation from mind and body. And it's a separation of your adult self with your child self. So any separation within the child is really painful. And unless that separation is resolved by seeing them, hearing them, loving them, protecting them, and they know that, that separation, because children blame themselves. Whenever there's stuff going on in the house, the child will blame themselves. And that becomes the inner critic. That becomes this sort of prefrontal cognitive narrative, oh, it must be me. And then the brain finds a way, if only I was quieter. You know, dad likes it when I'm quiet and I can't be quiet. You know, these are 5, 6, 7-year-old kids. So if you don't allow them to be who they are and relish their authenticity, they will split, and they will split in a way that they think will help the parent. And then they just lose more of themselves and they split more from themselves. And this is what causes a great deal of anxiety in our kids.
Totally. Because if you think back, if you're listening to this and you think back on when you had a rupture with your parents or you were punished or something, and you were just left by yourself to deal with these big emotions and sensations without a empathetic structure. Witness to help you with repair, you had to make sense of your life, of your reality, by saying, hey, I'm the bad one. It can't be infallible mom and dad. It's got to be me, because I, to deal with the fact that if mom and dad are the bad ones and I live in an unsafe environment, I can't deal with that. So I have to abandon myself in order to believe that my world is safe. And that over time becomes hardwired as I'm too much. I'm not enough. I'm inherently bad. And that split from self is why we all, that's why we're listening to this podcast. It's why we having, you know, we have dealt with alarm in our bodies and our minds. And so I'm really concerned about making sure that Dominic and the next generation doesn't have to live with it. So it all begins with me.
How do we do that?
How
do we make our kids feel more?
The first thing connected? There's so much. I mean, this is a huge conversation. But for the context of today's topic, which is making our kid an extension of ourselves, I think a good thing, as if I'm a parent, I'm going to look and see how I react to who my son is, the things that are embarrassing about him, the things that cause me to get triggered by his behavior. Okay. Like, let, for example, if he's playing, like he's 3 years old, he plays with his penis a lot. Right. And if that triggers me,
so many jokes,
and
here.
I try to shame him for it. And then sure. Diana looks at me and goes, Nima, hello. Yeah. Like, have you looked in a mirror? I'm like, oh yeah, I do that too. Shoot. Right. Okay. So in other words, how do we do it is to integrate our shadows, the parts of me that he's reflecting, using the relationship. First of all, seeing that it's my relationship with my son, me as a parent, is not about a role that I'm taking. It's about my relationship with him. That in and of itself is transformative, because it's not about me as the conscious parent,
right,
making sure that he's a straight A student and he's got all the whatever so that I can feel good about myself. It's about my relationship. I'm not responsible for who he is. I'm responsible for how I respond to him. That's really what the path is all about for me.
Yeah.
How about you?
And as an aside, you know, I see parents who, you know, have children with illnesses and children who say get involved on the wrong side of the law or whatever, and how they totally blame themselves for it. And, you know, many times they definitely play a role too. But I think there is this sense that, you know, we own our children and we kind of force them along a certain path. We teach them how to say please and thank you and all that kind of thing when they're younger. And we assume that they will follow a certain path. And so often, you know, we are just shepherds of our children. They have their own path. Some might get cancer. Some might get hit by a car. Some might, you know, light a house on fire. Like, and we take responsibility for that. Not saying that, you know, it isn't partially our fault or we should just wash our hands from everything. But I think our children have a path. And I think so many times parents get so upset about, oh, I could have stopped this, or I could have, like, that's their path. We sort of have this ego-based centric idea that a child is exactly what you're saying, an extension of ourselves. And they're not. They're their own little individual being. They're their own little spark of consciousness.
Yeah.
And they will have their own path. They will have their own traumas, just as we had our own traumas that were separate from our parents.
Yeah. It's there's a Rumi quote. Is it a Rumi or a Khalil Gibran poem that talks about this? And he's really big into children. They don't come from us. They come through us. Something like that. They don't belong to us. What is it?
Yeah,
I'll find the quote. It's a beautiful.
Yeah,
they
the same. Yeah, the same. They belong. Is like
they, but
it comes from the same path. Well, wait, stop for a sec. Let me finish.
Go.
Because otherwise we're going to be caught in the middle of this. It comes in the same pathway as that we do not inherit the land from our parents, but we borrow it from our children. It's kind of along the same kind of path. So it is that sort of sense that we feel like we have this ownership of our children. And of course we would, because we do so much for them. And we do feel like they are part of us. And in a way, they certainly are. But there, half of your DNA is the mother, half of it is the father. And I know with my own daughter, like, I tend to see the traits in Leandra that I have more than I see the traits in Leandra that her mother has, right? Mm. So there's that confirmation bias. Like, we look towards that. And getting back to that old confirmation bias that we were talking about earlier with the child, when they're alone in the room, when they feel bad, they will just start looking for things that they've done wrong. And they use that as evidence. So this confirmation bias. So if you have this feeling about yourself, this inner critic, this thing that you are somehow a delinquent, you will see all the things that you did wrong. You won't see the things that you do right. So, and that's true with all of us. I think we have this confirmation. We have these hypotheses about what we're about as children. And then we only see the part that actually confirms those hypotheses.
Yeah.
And we ignore the parts that don't.
Yeah. And it depends on your state too. If you're in sympathetic dominant, you're going to see things validating your own sympathetic dominance. Like, I'm not enough, I'm bad or whatever. And then if you're in dorsal and you're in shutdown, you're like, I'm hopeless. So you're going to, your state kind of determines what it is that you're going to see within yourself. Right. And so this question, you're like, how do we do it? it's really through understanding the polyvagal theory that I was able to learn how to self-regulate, how to love my, how to self-love through the polyvagal theory, learning how to love myself so that I can respond to my son.
What does that look like, Nima? What does that look like?
What it looks like basically is when Dominic is having big emotions, instead of trying to fix him and make him happy first, which is the knee-jerk reaction, because I'm operating from a place of I'm a bad parent. What I do is I take a pause and then I first tend to the rupture within me and I bring my system back to a, with my adult kind of brain online, and I join him in his anger or whatever, and I move him into play. So sympathetic and a little bit of ventral. So it's a blended state, which is playfulness. So if he's angry, I join him in his anger. I know it's okay to be angry. I'm angry too. Ah, let's both do it. Rah. And then he starts laughing. So I'm joining him in sympathetic, leading him into ventral. That's basically polyvagal parenting. And I did want to say one thing about that, that quote from Khalil Gibran. He said, this is the key. This is what I think in polyvagal parenting. So Dominic's not an extension of me. Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. And I think that's a really great place to start to help prevent them from becoming an extension of your own ego.
Yeah. And it depends on how much trauma you have yourself too, because I think, like I said earlier on, you know, if you're completely stressed and traumatized and you have this child, especially if you're a single parent, you naturally, because you love them, you are going to try and engage them in looking after you, especially if you didn't get looked after yourself. So that's when this codependence really starts. And then, because with me, with my dad, I would try and read him all the time, because if he was really happy, I would think, well, maybe he's going into a manic phase, right? Maybe it's going to be 4 days of
hypervigilance.
Or if he's starting to be a bit sad, I'm like, oh, is he going to go into like this psychotic depression where he's got to be admitted to hospital? So there was this vigilance for me of constantly reading him. And 95% of the time, I was completely wrong. He was just having a sad day or a happy day. He wasn't getting into depression or mania.
It wasn't about you.
But as a child, though, we start developing these sort of black and white strategies, and we start reading. And this is, I think, what makes us really good at reading other people, is that we had to learn how to read our parents. We were never given that freedom to be our authentic selves. So when you're in this sort of trauma-based reality where things do go wrong in the hood, and you have to learn how to see it coming, you develop this kind of hypervigilant, anxious kind of state where you learn how to read people very well. And you can that can go two ways. You can be a kind manipulator, which is a people pleaser, or you can become a narcissist. But it still comes from the same root cause.
100%. And that all causes us to separate from ourselves and create anxiety in our lives, which is what you've dedicated your life and myself as well in realm of relationship anxiety, to helping break that cycle that, you know, our parents unknowingly with several, I actually just did a podcast on the seven, how parents impact our relationships, how your parents, the way they're parenting you, they impacted your relationships. There's seven main ways that create like narcissism, codependency. I just released a podcast about that. And one of them that which I wanted to get your take on it was this, the child is the ego extension. And so the answer is always to come back within ourselves and to the more secure I am within me, the less I make Dominic's emotions and who he is about me. And the more I'm able to hold space for his emergence of who he is, his authentic self, because I can be okay with my authentic self. I've integrated my shadows. So the greatest gift that I can give my son is a self-loving parent. And that prevents him from getting anxiety, which is a split from self.
Right.
And so that's what I'm really keen in now, educating people about, who are really keen on going deeper.
So I have a quick question for you, Nina.
Yeah.
So how is your boisterousness, because I don't think that's changed over the years, how was that handled by your parents? Like, were you immediately shut down, or
there was judgment? There was sometimes it was like laughter, because they appreciated my boisterousness when their when their friends were over and I get to be on display,
right?
But I remember my mom was constantly reading psychology books to try to learn how to handle me. I was a bit of a problem for them, and so I always felt like I was inherently like bad. Like, this is why, where my thing of, I always have something to prove. I got to prove myself throughout my life, choosing profession. I got to prove that chiropractic is valid and it's superior, and I got to prove. And so it led to a lot of that angst of, that's an anxious kid having to constantly prove himself, right? And I want Dominic to already know his inherent worth.
I think he does. I think you and Diana are doing a great job with him. Like, for me, my boisterousness wasn't handled well at all, because my mother would shut me down immediately as soon as I started making noise. And I attribute that to growing up during World War II and having to go down to bomb shelters, like any noise. To this day, like, she has hearing aids, right? She's 90. She's going to be 91 in August. And it's like, to this day, she'll put in, I'll be in there where she doesn't have her hearing aids. Like, how are you today? You know? And then she'll have her hearing aids in, and I'll say, how are you today? She'll go, way too loud. So, I was shut down as a child for being, you know, kind of, and my brother, I think, learned from that vicariously, because my brother's much more, you know, calm and sort of measured and that kind of thing. Whereas I was just a, like, you know, sock in the wind. I would just go away which way, in which direction.
And here you are. Every child will have a different experience, right? And there's no perfect parenting. And the key, I really want to, you know, this is not, I do want to make a distinction, you know, the title of this podcast is about, you know, how our parents cause anxiety. This is not really about blaming parents, because everyone's doing the best that we can. This is really about a conversation where we could then first learn how to meet our own needs, so that we show up as the adults and make sure that our kids don't have, you know, like this pandemic of anxiety that's going around, that we're using screens to self-soothe and pornography. And I want my son, I'll be damned if my son has a relationship the kind that I had last time. Right. And so last relationship. So this is all, you know, something to,
but again, Nima, again, that's his path, right? Like, you can do your best to kind of guide him and direct him and give him the tools, but there may be a, you know, dysfunctional relationship in his life as well, right? So there's stuff that we can't really control.
The chances of him seeking out partners the way I did to prove something are far less if he's raised in an environment where his needs are met, and my relationship with his mother is really strong. That's another thing. At this stage of the game, from zero to like 4 or 5, my role as a dad, more so than not, is to make sure that mom is operating from a full battery, right? Because that's where she can pour all of that. That first 4 years with mom and son is really important.
It's so
afterwards, critical. Now we can get into the rough and tumble, into the wrestling. My job is to help him individuate from his mother and not be anxious.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, notice your own anxiety as a parent too, and understand where it comes from. Because what we were just talking about is, like, I got shut down for my boisterousness as a child. Yours was kind of pushed in a different direction. And that kind of thing is like, okay, realize, like, what happened? Like, take some time for you, if you're a parent, and even if you're not a parent, like, what happened to you? Like, how did your, that's the question I ask everybody. How did your parents handle your anger? You know, was it shut down? Was it accepted? Was it brought in? Like, anger is a huge protective emotion for us. And if we shut down our child's anger, we're essentially leaving them defenseless.
Yeah, because without any repair.
Without any repair.
not so showing them how to work through it and work through it and regulate it, which is what our role is.
So it's really understanding what happened to you, you know, where you're, which is what you do. It's like, okay, I see, you know, what happened to me in the past. My knee jerk reaction is to kind of shut Dominic down or whatever it is, or make him less boisterous. And you realize, hey, if I join him in play, I can kind of actually groove together with that sympathetic energy. And then we can together move over. And this is what you and I were talking about the other day with him, is moving him into a parasympathetic state where, you know, you get them all worked up and then you have a cuddle on the couch. And I used to do this with Leandra all the time when I was in med school, and you start calibrating their autonomic nervous system. So my point is, realize what were the flaws in how you were parented, and realize that you're probably going to do the same thing, right?
Without even knowing, because it's especially just what we know, right?
Without even knowing. So yeah. I know that you're doing a parenting seminar for your people. When is that?
This is, in our community, and it's open to the public now as well. I'm doing a 3-hour workshop called Connecting to the Anxious Child, how to supporting your kid's emotional health by becoming a polyvagal parent. Really, if you understand the mechanisms of the polyvagal theory, which is public, you can learn all about it, but applying that to your kid, applying it to you, really repairing with you before you address the kid, and how to make sure that you can support them rather than leaving them on their own to then come up with their own kind of narratives that we did, which I'm too much, I'm not enough, I'm bad, I'm inherently bad. And then getting into relationships with this really faulty wiring, how to prevent that by becoming a polyvagal parent. And that's coming right up.
Cool.
I'll give you the link. You could drop it in.
We'll put it in the Manxiety podcast.
Beautiful. And it's only $30 actually. So I want to make applicable to everybody. It's 3 hours Absolutely. Long, and anybody who wants to just really become, like, embody the conscious parent rather than take it on as like a fantasy, actually become that type of parent that sees parenting as a spiritual practice, this is perfect for those people.
And gain some awareness too. I think that's a lot of it. Like, you're not going to change your life in 3 hours, but it is going to start making you think and making you more aware of, oh, okay, these are my sore spots. These are my blind spots. You know,
Bingo.
I can be aware of them and I can see them coming. And I know in Overview, you talk about that, like the prequel, the preamble period there, where you can start seeing, oh, this is where the engine's starting to warm up. This is where it's starting to go. Now, that's a place where you can actually start instituting change, as opposed to once you've peaked the roller coaster,
you're
just
flooded,
to peak the summit,
your brain shut off. You can't really change, no, but you're able to catch the awareness first and then carve out a new path. This is the hardest work I've ever done, but the most rewarding. And now my relationships have transformed, and I don't, anxiety does not cripple me anymore. And relationships are secure, which is beautiful.
I can vouch for that. Okay. So we'll put that in the show notes. That's Friday the 19th. What time in Pacific time?
It's 4 to 7 PM, which is 7 to 10 Eastern. And that's Saturday morning in Australia, New Zealand.
Oh, good eye, mate. All right. All right, my friend.
Yes.
Well, thanks for co-hosting the Manxiety podcast with me. Here's another episode we can put in the can, and we're just going to keep doing this.
Beautiful. Love to hear any feedback. Send me a DM or an email. What's arisen from you? Share this with somebody who you think would really benefit. It's been struggling with a kid with anxiety. Or maybe even narcissism as well, because it's the same. There's so much overlap here.
Oh, sure.
And don't forget to share it, like, and subscribe. And we'll see you at the next perfect time.
Bye for now.